Okay, thanks. This is the Tucson Pima County Historical Commission meeting of Wednesday, February 8th, 2023, called to order at 12:09 p.m. Could we have roll call, please?
Yes. Alice Sandagi. Carlos Lozano.
Here.
Carol Griffin. Jeffrey Awand.
Present.
Helen Erickson.
Here.
Jan Mulder.
Here.
Jennifer Lustig.
Here.
JJ Lamb.
Here.
Joel Ireland.
Here.
Peter Steer. Ricky Riojas. Sandy Brook. Savannah McDonald.
Here.
Stephen Greedy.
Here.
Terry Majewski.
Here.
Tim Haggard. Tim Haggard?
Here.
I'm only seeing...
I'll read the BCC opening statement.
Wait a second.
This meeting is being held virtually.
I only have 11.
Nobody called me.
Okay, so it's Ken Scoville. Yeah, add Ken to your yes. So then we have 12. Okay?
Yeah, I do have 12.
Okay.
If anyone leaves, though, we do lose quorum. So if anyone plans on leaving early, we would need to know.
Right. Go ahead and read the statement.
This meeting is being held virtually due to COVID-19 to allow for social distancing and to protect the public health. As we continue our efforts in meeting remotely, we ask all commissioners and guests to mute yourselves until called upon to speak to avoid feedback and background noise. For those who have dialed in using the call-in number to unmute to speak, dial *6 on your phone. Also, prior to speaking, please announce who you are to identify yourself. As a reminder, this meeting is being recorded. We ask that you only use the chat function to request to speak or to announce that you are leaving the meeting so that we can keep track of quorum. Also, in order to comply with the state open meeting law, attendance and votes will be done by way of using audio, not by using the chat function. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We'll go on to item 2, approval of TPCHC minutes from the meeting of January 11th, 2023. Could we have a motion to approve as submitted?
So moved. This is Steve Grady.
Okay, thank you. Is there a second?
Jeff, I'll want a second.
Great, thank you. Is there discussion? Okay, if not, please call roll for the vote.
Carlos Lozano?
Aye.
Jeffrey Alwan?
Aye.
Helen Erickson?
Aye.
Jennifer Lustig?
Aye.
JJ Lamb?
Aye.
Joel Ireland?
Yes.
Ken Scoville?
Yes.
Peter Steer? Savannah McDonald?
Aye.
Stephen Greedy?
Aye.
Terry Majewski?
Aye.
Tim Haggard?
Aye.
I only have 11. We're missing somebody.
This is Jan. I was not called. I vote aye.
Okay, thank you. We have 12. Okay, item 3 is chairperson's summary of current events. I don't have anything at this time except, you know, from time to time, I forward you all of you things via Blind CC so that you can be informed of things. Also, item 4 is recently posted subcommittee minutes. At the time, quite a while in advance of the meeting that I prepared this. Only the plans review subcommittee meeting from 1/12/23 was already posted, was completed. But there's some other minutes, so watch between meetings because things get posted from time to time if you wish to review them. Okay, item 5 is removal appointments to commission subcommittees and so on, and I don't have any at this time. Okay, item 6 is reports from city and county staff. 6A is City of Tucson. Jody, would you like to begin?
Sure. Good afternoon, everybody. I have some items to report. Nothing too exciting. But as I mentioned last time, the Arizona Preservation Conference will be held this year in Tucson. And one of the things that the conference committee looks to the local, city for is the, it's called the Elizabeth Ruffner Award. It's a Keystone Award, and they started it in 2019. In 2019, when they held it in Prescott, Elizabeth Ruffner was the award winner. In 2021, it was Darlene Justice, because they held it in Tempe. And then most recently, a number of you will remember, in Yuma, it was Tina Clark. These are all people who have been instrumental in working in their local communities to forward the goals of historic preservation. They have worked with archaeology or designating sites or protecting sites or anything along those lines. And there's plenty of time because our conference isn't until October, but I want to put this into your brains of starting to think about somebody that we can have as a person for the Keystone Awards, because they will look to us to that person. So it's just a thought. Just now, you guys might want to think about it. But I can send you a web address that's on AZ Preservation of the award winners and kind of their background. I'll send that to the city clerk's office so you can get an idea of what the other people have done that have won it. But that's definitely something that's in this commission sphere to think about and to nominate that person for this award. Moving on, I wanted to let you know that we do have some code changes. We've done some code cleanup that not necessarily impacting historic, but they're going to the Planning Commission. We also have, it's been our 1 year experiment with, ADU, accessory dwelling units. And so we are doing an evaluation of how that's gone. And we have a survey that's online at our PDSD website. And we are continuing to do EnerGov training, for the TDC, the Tucson Development Center online for when you have to submit for permits. So if you want to have training for that, you guys can go online, and there's every other week. I think we're doing those now. We're continuing to do those as training. And then just kind of a general update, we're starting to see a fair number of projects come in for the Sunshine Mile Urban Overlay District. A lot of them are adaptive reuse. We have one that's starting to kind of talk to us about the historic Solot block and doing some adaptive reuse with that area. They've just done some preliminary discussions with the city, but it is positive that we have some work coming in. And really, for this point, these are the only updates that I have.
Great, thank you. Are there any questions for Jody?
I have a question. Jeff Elwin here. Is that award, Elizabeth, could you spell Ruckner so I can find it in my computer?
Yeah, it's R-U-F-F-N-E-R. I'm pretty sure Ruffner is how it's said, but you know, I tend to mispronounce even my own children's names sometimes.
That's correct, Jody. Where did you say the link was again, if you don't mind repeating that? To the award.
It's on the it's azpreservation.org /Keystone. And Jeff, Elizabeth is spelled with an S, not a Z.
Ah, okay.
And I can I can try and find the link to that and send it around. And it's something that we could talk about if the commission, if you're expecting the commission to put together a nomination, Jody.
It is like a nomination. They look to the local city that's hosting the conference to put forth a name of somebody that has just been instrumental in historic preservation.
Right. Sounds good. So Helen, did you have your hand up? You're on mute.
Yep. You say there have been code changes that didn't necessarily impact historic preservation. Where would we find this, and what did it affect?
A lot of it is, of course, Corinne isn't here, and she's the one who gave me that update. And there's Corinne. I'll let Corinne discuss that.
Yeah. Okay. It's a package of code streamlining items. Some are process changes, for example, related to wireless communication towers and water wells, just kind of some processes that we're trying to streamline in our code. Are a few aspects that are also to remove barriers to infill development. One of those is to lower parking requirements for small-scale multifamily development, so 2 to 5 units, reducing those parking requirements, which is often a barrier to that scale of infill. One of the other items would allow townhouses, which are currently not permitted as of right in our code, even in districts that allow multifamily use. Townhomes are not possible to be developed in our code right now without some sort of special approval process. And then there is also a change to allow front yard carports and shade structures. And this is one where we did hear concerns about the impact on historic status in historic neighborhoods. So right now, what you can do is you can build a carport if it's attached to the primary structure. So as long as it's attached, you can do that carport. But what we see is, obviously, shade is a huge need in Tucson, and a lot of people would prefer to do a detached shade structure. That's not currently allowed in any way in our code, so we're proposing to allow detached carports and shade structures of up to 400 square feet, so basically enough room for 2 cars. There was concern about how this would impact historic neighborhoods and districts. We definitely discussed this a bit with Jody, and Jody's take was that this could actually be beneficial because rather than attaching to the contributing structure, this could now be a freestanding carport or shade structure. Of course, if it's an HPZ, it would still go through a full HPZ review process. But for National Register districts, this would be permitted as a right. So that's one thing just to bring up. The full list, there's about 10 items. Full list is on our website if you go to the PSD website. And then in the left-hand column, there's an area for news, and there's an update about this code streamlining package. This is going to Planning Commission for a public hearing next Wednesday, February 15th at 6 p.m. That's a virtual meeting.
I have a question about shade structures in front yards in historic districts. And has this, has SHPO weighed in with an opinion on this, or where does this stand as far? Because ordinarily we're talking about issues of things like fences, but this is a much larger intrusion. So I'm just curious where that stands.
Yeah, I don't know. You have
SHPO has not weighed in on it. It is the code update. It's a citywide impact on that. So we did not query SHPO on this. Ideally, for any property owner, they go to SHPO before they do any work to their property. That's a standard protocol that when they participate or they're in a historic district, we always send them to SHPO, and SHPO is put out. You need to come to us to get the buy-off if you want to be maintained as a contributing resource within the district.
Right. That was actually one of my concerns that I was going towards, is the tax incentive to be part of the district. And so you'd want to be sure that people were aware that if they went ahead and did this, that they could end up with issues as far as that goes.
This is
and it's a matter of...
I'm sorry.
This is Ken.
Sorry, I didn't know who was green there.
Hold on, Ken. I'll call on you.
Please stay muted unless you guys are speaking, because that was a lot. Please.
Yeah, and raise your hand if you want to speak next, Ken.
Okay, go ahead. I can't find my hand up function today on my screen, so.
Okay, just raise your hand then, and I'll see you. Okay, finish up, please, Jody.
So, I mean, and everything is a matter of design, too. So even with the front yard fences, if the fence allows visibility through it, they have considered those to be maintained as contributors to the district. It's when it's a full block. And with a carport structure, you usually have a lot of visibility through the carport. You're not even disrupting it by attaching it. It's got that visibility because it's really just posts and the supports. But ultimately, you know, it is something that we encourage people to go to SHPO to get the buy-off, because SHPO will be the ones making that determination of whether or not it maintains its contributing status.
But I'm just curious why you didn't go beforehand if SHPO's going to say no to detached carports in the front, you know. So
it's a citywide code change. It doesn't just impact the historic districts. So for us then to say you can't do this in a National Register district. I mean, the HPZs aside, those are a different thing because those always have to go through review. But for us to say you can't do this in a National Register district, then it's us regulating a National Register district similar to how we regulate an HPZ, and we don't have the authority to do that.
Okay.
Thing I would say, though, I think, you know, in all fairness to people who are in historic districts, they need to be made aware of this either directly or in some way so that they're not caught by surprise. I just think it's a hardship for those people if they aren't contacted, or perhaps this is a case where people in historic district, owners in historic districts, need to be contacted about the change and its implication.
Because they'd be very surprised if they got a letter from SHPO saying you're being considered for removal from the tax incentive program. So okay, Ken, go off mute.
You're on mute. I'm
having problems with my screen today. I have several comments and concerns, and again, I'm on the research group also. First of all, there's just, as we're doing research, there's just ongoing transparency issues about finding out what's gone on. So when you're saying things maybe directly or indirectly apply, I think everybody needs to be aware of whatever's going on in planning and changes, and because indirectly or directly, they're going to start impacting historic resources. Just like the densification of Tucson, it's ongoing. Certain landscapes, that is really going to change the historic landscape with the densification push with the city of Tucson. So we all need to know all of this. And so that this ongoing transparency issue within the whole city of Tucson and things going on, we're trying to put pieces back together. And this is another piece that's going to need to be clarified. And just like we said with SHPO and all this other things, because that front streetscape, when people walk through an historic district or HPZ, that's a critical factor. And if you start adding on carports and other things, you're ruining or hardship on the integrity of the property. So I can understand all the needs and shade and everything else, but it really needs to be a high visibility issue so those people in districts and all can know about this. So I would appreciate, and I'm sure our research team would appreciate, the link to where all these changes are going on. And when something is going forward to a planning commission or something, we need to know enough time ahead to go down and lobby and state the position and concerns. So let's push for more transparency. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions for Jody? Not seeing any, so.
I'll just say I'll send the link to the clerk's office so they can share that. And I'm also going to send the link to our clerk's representative for the PDSD newsletter, because if you are not subscribed, I really recommend that you subscribe. We held meetings, a number of public meetings on this last fall, and it's been an ongoing process for several months now. So that's a great resource for information about projects like this.
Okay, thank you, Corinne. Okay, let's move on then to item 6B, which is Pima County Cultural Resources. Linda?
Hi there. Good afternoon, everyone. We've not had a lot of new things happen, but I will say that our grants are finally moving through the system, including Mission Garden, the earmark to do some improvements at the garden. That includes a National Register nomination for Chuxon, the greater area around the Mission Garden. We will be moving ahead with the Juan Santa Cruz effort and the Fort Lowell bond project with the city. I understand Mayor and Council signed the IGA, and I'm waiting for the signed copies to come back over to me so I can then get them to our Board of Supervisors. And then in addition to that, we will be starting our comprehensive plan update that's required by the legislature. So more about that as it kicks off. But that's really all I have to offer today. Thank you.
Thanks, Linda. Are there any questions for – is Courtney going to speak to or
– No, she's not. She's out sick today.
Okay. Okay. Anyone have a question for Linda?
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Linda. Let's move on then to item 6C, which is Tucson Department of Transportation and Mobility. Jennifer Toothaker is going to present the quarterly update. And Jen, I wanted to just mention that thank you for sending the worksheet report, but I would just ask you in the future, if you're going to send to all commissioners, put them on a BCC line. Because
apologies.
And commissioners, do not respond to this email reply all. Okay, thank you. Okay, go ahead.
Just a reminder on that. Yeah, sure. Having technical issues this morning, and I can't get enough internet bandwidth to be able to present. I'm logged in through my cell phone right now. So that will shorten my report out to you all. The PDF that was emailed to you does contain the full list of our projects as we are keeping track of them. Of note, to give, you know, some of the bigger projects that are often of interest for this group, Grant Road, 3-4, which is that section that's Country Club to Swan, is it's finished construction drawings. So it will be going out to bid for construction probably mid to late May. Utility relocations, everything is done. So now it's ready to go to construction. We'll have more once they've actually brought on the contractor for that, we'll have a better idea of what that schedule will be and how they're going to then commence with the construction work and traffic modifications. For Grant Road 5-6, which is the section largely between Park and Country Club, they've just reached a 60% complete design, which is a milestone, and that is going to be presented out to the Grant Road Task Force. That group, they'll be looking to set a date, probably end of March, early April. As we get more information on that, we can share that out with you. I don't know, and I apologize for not knowing this. We have put out to bid and are in the process of negotiating for design of a bridge and some transition road improvements to the bridge on Drexel Road. The bridge would span Santa Cruz River. This would be connecting a previously unconnected part of town where the river has basically kept these two areas separated. So that is something that's just going into design. We are anticipating pursuing future federal funds on that. So we are taking a very conservative design approach, meaning we're trying to get this out of the gate following all the NEPA protocols. Every clearance that we need, we'll be very careful moving forward with that. So just want to put that on your radars. For some fun things to share, downtown Lynx, there is going to be a ribbon cutting on February 17th from 9 to 10 a.m. I'll have to get a hold of the news release and invitation to share out with you all. And that was part of my technical difficulties. And then this Sunday, we will have a car-free celebration, car-free weekend celebration on the new McClovio-Barraza Parkway. So there's a segment that's done. It's going to be kept closed. We're not accepting traffic on it yet. And we'll be setting it up for some fun with a bike rodeo, parklet demonstration, mobile bike repair, and more. And last but not least, we are doing a comprehensive operational analysis of our transit system. There are various public meetings that are being held throughout town, and we are encouraging anyone who is a rider on transit, who has any interest in our transit system, to please participate. I will also follow up with information on how to do so by email as soon as I can. I'll end there. I see, Carlos, your hand is up.
Hi, Jen. Hey, I was curious, later on I'm going to be talking about the ETOD Norte Sewer Project, and they say they don't have any timetables and that they are not suggesting, like, an alignment per se. So, but we're moving into phase two. Do you have any feeling for when the city is going to start to solidify these plans into a reality, like choosing a mode of transit, or do you have any feelings for that at all?
I do. And we're entering into a really great phase on this project as it relates to the transit piece, meaning we're investigating how to find funding, so how to make ourselves competitive for future federal funding for transit, whether it's BRT or streetcar, along this sort of 15-mile study area. We are going to be, as part of that, exploring alignments. But first, we need to understand what it takes to get us to be competitive, which will then scope out what we need to do. And so we will be launching into some efforts moving forward. And they are connected, even though they're separate. Even talking about the study area around this 15-mile corridor, the first thing people really jump to is talking about the transit and riding the bus. And, you know, where is that alignment? Even though we're with the Tucson Norte Sewer Project right now, looking at the how to develop in the corridor, how to put in the housing, and how to kind of address that aspect. So because of this tight connection, we can do more of a presentation, if that would be helpful, to Transportation Subcommittee down the line, maybe to the full commission, as makes sense, and give you more information in a sort of comprehensive way.
Okay, so we're going to try to get representation in the working group, and that would answer a lot of questions so that you wouldn't have to, but but at some point, yeah, another presentation would be great. And thanks a lot.
Okay, Ken, you're on mute.
Yes, I got it. Hi, Jennifer. I guess some questions that Carlos and I have sort of been mulling over is, as if we don't know exactly, especially how light rail is going to get through downtown. I don't know if Fourth Avenue or the links would be a possibility, but everything else is going to start threatening underpasses and other historic resources. So this portion where the city's starting to think about where this should go, we just need to have to raise the hand for those of us that want to deal with historic preservation. It was a struggle to save Stone Avenue. And obviously the streetscape on both those underpasses, you have the bicycle ridges going in front of it. So that's changed, but it's preserving the historic resources. But going further, I don't know how you're going to get through downtown if we can't use Lynx or Fourth Avenue to get around some of these things.
That is something that's come up already in conversation, and that, you know, is going to be a topic of conversation into the design moving forward. So no immediate answer for you, but I will say that is 100%, like, folks are aware of that. Anyone who's working.
Well, it might even more than awareness, it's sort of like, no.
Understood.
Don't go to
Stone Avenue,
Sixth Avenue, those places. It's not, you know, it's just no. So, you know, we finally got links getting finished, and that actually gets under the railroad tracks. So somehow we ought to make use of those things. I know it's supposed to be high-speed transit and all those other things. And also Stone Avenue, but then you've got a problem when you get to the underpass, but Stone Avenue is also US 80. So it's obviously been a transportation corridor for decades. But then you got the problem of it getting around the railroad. So just, we need to know early on all this so we can obviously have a few thoughts and comments.
You got it.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else with a question for Jen? Great. Thank you very much, Jen.
Thank you all.
And be sure, everyone, to pick up that report. That would be great. All right, let's move on to item 7, which is commission, subcommittee, other committee, council, commission status reports. And we'll start out with 7A for plans review. Jody, do you have any comments?
We have no meeting for tomorrow.
Right, that's be sure everyone... Yeah, so people need to know that who are on plans review. Okay? All right, so that's no meeting 2/9/2023. Okay, thanks. And I don't have anything to add to that either. Okay, 7B is Downtown Neighborhoods and Residents Council. Commissioner Haggard. Tim? Tim, are you there?
I don't see him. I don't think we have quorum here.
There he is.
Oh, there he is.
Here. I was off the... so the Downtown Neighborhood Advisory Committee met on Monday, and the majority of that meeting was self-reflection on why do we exist, should we exist, and the consensus was, after kind of going through that, that yes, we should exist and continue on, and speaking about how to get more neighborhoods involved in the meetings, and we're going to take a look at maybe doing some outreach to some of the neighborhoods that have not been participating. One of the things that had been brought up, just as was the potential of the parking structures and how that might impact some of the historic neighborhoods, there is concern that, you know, folks would, you know, put in these shade structures and in a neighborhood that is historic, maybe the National, and, you know, could lose their could impact their historic status within that. So that was pretty much it.
Great, thank you. Any questions for Tim? OK, Okay, thank you. I appreciate it. Okay, let's move on to 7C, which is Historic Landscape Subcommittee. Commissioner Grady.
Yes, thank you. We have nothing to report at this time.
Okay, let's go to 7D, which is Transportation Subcommittee. Commissioner Lozano.
Hi, thanks. Hey, everybody. I've got a bunch of really good updates, interesting updates. I'll go as fast as I can. So on the TEP, DeMoss Petrie transmission lines, this was the issue where it's going through the scenic areas and near right in front of Sam Hughes, and we were discussing last year undergrounding along those sensitive areas. So mayor and council just voted a couple weeks ago to call for a special election in May to allow Tucson voters to decide if they want to raise the franchise fee, and this would pay for at least 2 miles of undergrounding, which was, everybody knew this is what we wanted, but how to pay for it was the big issue. And it not only pays for undergrounding, but a lot of climate initiatives. So if you hear about it in the news, they'll probably report talking more about the climate initiatives than the undergrounding. Just so you know, the average user would have to pay less than $1 or more per month to do this. So this is going to be, and the referendum is going to be called, you'll hear about it. It'll be called a resiliency fee. So that's what pay attention for that. So that's good. I consider that good. Moving on to I-11. Let's see. Back in August of 2021, you'll remember that the commission sort of allied with some environmental groups to oppose the I-11, and I didn't know, but last year they filed a lawsuit, and I just found out that as of January they're going ahead with that. It's the Coalition for Sonoran Desert Protection and also the Center for Biological Diversity. So that's interesting. And I'll ask Peter Steer if he knows anything else about this in a second. But the reason I mention this is that we were worried that ADOT's strategy would be to pit the preservationists against the environmentalists, and which would be a very effective strategy. But we chose to ally with them. And the report that I heard, the quote in the news, was that Carolyn Campbell said, I better not quote her, I'll just paraphrase, that the good alternative would be to expand I-10 and I-19 without widening. That's the key part, to use I-10 and I-19, but to not widen and take out historic resources. So I'm glad that they are sticking with that and that we are still united. That's really good. And then let's see, moving on to another item that I was going to tell you about, I think last month, there was this road diet that was proposed for 5th and 6th Street, and it failed because it didn't pass a capacity test, basically. Maybe I did tell you about this, and it was like, duh, because of course, how could a road diet pass a capacity test? But luckily, and I thought it was completely dead, but luckily Steve Kay continued to discuss it with transportation, and so they are going to give it a try, and they're going to try it and see if it works, and look at how the projections relate to reality. And that will be east of Country Club. So the reason why this is a preservation issue is that this is going right through Colonial, Solana, and El Encanto. And this is, this road diet is a lot more of how that road was when those when those subdivisions were first developed and how they were originally envisioned. So that's why it's something that we need to pay attention to. But I'm really happy about that. And then I only have one other thing, but it's the most important thing. It's I'm going to lead up to a motion here, but just to speak casually. So this is about the ETOD Norte Sewer Project, and we had a presentation on this. But if you don't remember, it stands for Equitable Transit Oriented Development, and it happens to be running from north to south, from the Tohono O'odham Transit Center to the airport. And it's not like a specific plan. It's more of a visioning document and a study which is going to create a path to upgrading transit where it's needed the most. And in this case, the most traveled routes in the city, I believe, are Oracle and South 6. So that, even though they're not specifying an alignment, if they follow the most heavily, the heavy routes, then it would actually be Oracle and South 6 mostly. And then it's also very, very, very much about land use. And so it's encouraging mixed-use development and affordable housing, mostly via overlays. And it doesn't provide funding, but it tells us how to get it, right? As that's what Jen was telling us about. So that's all great. That's all fantastic, right? But this is the part where preservation should be concerned. It's going to have direct impacts, and I'll just go from north to south, from on Miracle Mile Historic District, the Pascua-Yaqui Village, West University Historic Preservation Zone, Warehouse Historic District, including the underpasses. That's what Ken was talking about. John Spring Historic District, Downtown Tucson Historic District, Army Park HPZ, Historic Route 80, the El Paso Southwestern Historic District, and then also countless of undesignated potentially historic properties that we know exist in City of South Tucson and also the South Tucson in general. So and those are only the resources that it's physically touching. If you expand out to the entire study area, I couldn't even tell you. So and impacts could take the form of just flat out demolitions due to road widenings needed for the transit system. But then other impacts could result from changes in land use. And even if the city itself does not buy something and tear it down, it could trigger runaway development. So that's one of the things that we're worried about. And I talked to one of the City of South Tucson council members, and he cited an LA study, which actually does document increased gentrification in similar projects. And the case studies that were supplied with the study document don't specifically address this, so it's hard to really analyze it technically. But again, let's just say, so the phase one portion is done, and the public comment period ends next week. And I think that we should do a comment in a very constructive manner. Detailing the good points and the bad points. But so here's my motion, and I wrote it down because I never can remember these things. So I move that the TPCHC write a letter supporting the goals and vision of the ETOD Norte Sewer Project, and outlining our specific concerns related to historic preservation that need to be addressed in phase two moving forward, and also requesting that TPCHC have a representative on the phase two working group.
Thank you, Carlos. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Okay. So Carlos moved and Ken seconded. Is there discussion of the motion? Okay, if not, could you take roll call vote, please, Amari?
Carlos Lozano.
That's aye.
Carol Griffin? Not here. Jeffrey Awan?
Aye.
Helen Erickson?
Aye.
Jan Mulder?
Aye.
Jennifer Lustig?
Aye.
JJ Lamb?
Aye.
Joel Ireland?
Yes.
Ken Scullyville?
Aye.
Savannah McDonald?
Aye.
Stephen Greedy?
Aye.
Harry Majewski?
Here.
Tim Haggard?
Here.
Tim? Okay.
Tim?
Here. Here.
Okay, so you're good with that 12?
12 to 0, yes.
Okay, thank you. Do you have anything else, Carlos?
No, thanks. That's all I have. Ken?
Oh, wait a second. Helen had her hand up, then Ken. You're on mute, Helen.
Yeah, right. I just wanted to add to the discussions about I-11 because, Terry, you and I were part of the discussion group on this, and what we came to the conclusion was that we needed to underground additions to I-11 through Tucson, and that this would be the most equitable, least damaging way to handle an expansion. And I think it's important that we keep that in mind, because if they decided to build an elevated highway through the center of Tucson, it would only reinforce the division between our east and west sides. And historically, the impact would range again. Carlos obviously listed a lot of the historic neighborhoods that would be impacted by this. And I think one of the things we need to keep an eye on here is whether they will decide the simple solution is just to have a double-decker highway through Tucson, which is definitely not acceptable from a historic preservation perspective.
Okay, thank you. Ken?
Yes, I just sort of wanted to make a comment for everybody today from an historian's perspective. All cities want to grow, and the name of the game is the road. And widening roads, changing roads, paving roads. Congress Street wasn't widened until 1916. And it's also about getting the camel's nose in the tent. So all these projects moving forward, lots of good with them, but lots of destruction if you're concerned about historic resources. So it's caveat emptor, and I just want people to realize it's always the camel's nose in the tent for change. That's it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Carlos, do you have something else?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I forgot to ask Peter if the tribes were involved in that lawsuit.
Peter's not here today.
Remember? Oh, okay.
Yeah, he couldn't be on, so I would just email him about that.
Okay.
Call him.
Thanks.
Okay. All right, let's move on to the next item, which is 7E, Commission on Equitable Housing and Development. Commissioner McDonald.
Sure. Okay. So the commission had a meeting on the 2nd. I was able to watch the first hour. Reviewed a lot of good information, including a new housing and urban development rule about affirmatively furthering fair housing, which will be implemented soon. They also reviewed sort of their goals and talking points with themselves as a commission in terms of strengthening their relationship with mayor and council, and those lines of communication between the commission and the council. And then they reviewed the city of Tucson's housing, or HCD, had 4 project recommendations that applied for and highly rated to receive the home or ARPA housing development RFP funding. And they asked for the commission to review that. They weren't able to approve as they didn't have enough information, but they did review it. So that was the first hour at least.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Savannah? I just want to go back briefly to Carlos. Carlos, can you email me that motion that you wrote down? Can't hear you.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'll get the letter to you for sure, a draft, very, very soon, because the deadline is next Wednesday.
Okay, and then we can communicate about all who the letter has to be to and so forth. Okay, thanks. Okay, we need to pick up the pace here because I don't want to lose anyone. Item 8 is update on District 5 Oral History Project. Commissioner Scoville, do you have anything on that? Ken?
I'm here.
Okay, do you have an update?
Not really. I've communicated a few times back and forth, but she's just working away on her project, and I'm always available as a resource person.
Okay, thank you. Item 9 is updates to Plan Tucson. Jody or Corin, do you have anything to update us on, like on the schedule especially?
Yeah, actually. Okay, Jody.
Go ahead, Corin. I'll let you go do it.
Okay, cool. So last time we gave you guys a quick overview of the community engagement program and the process. And actually this month, Jasmine Chan is here. She is the project manager for the Plan Tucson update. So she will share just a couple slides on the timeline and our outreach. So I will turn it over to Jasmine.
Thanks, Corin, and thanks, commission members, for having me. I'm going to pull up my screen here. Let me make sure I'm not seeing the right page showing up over there. Okay, great. I'm going to share my screen. So do you see a PowerPoint that says informational presentation?
Yes.
County? Okay, cool. Seeing some nods. Since acknowledging that we don't have a whole lot of time, I'm probably not going to go through all of my slides here, but more than happy to distribute that to the group through Jody. So wanted to first introduce kind of the core set of individuals who are most directly assigned to working on Plan Tucson. That's myself, Jasmine Chan. I'm the project manager. I am working with Amanda Smith. She is the lead planner here at Planning and Development Services, and Ian Wan, who is a planner also with PDSD. In addition to us, we are also working with Southwest Decision Resources, support on facilitation and meeting design, and then we are working with Gordley Group, who are providing the marketing graphics, all of that component to the project, as well as other amazing individuals here at the City of Tucson, including Corin Manning, Dan Bursick, Acacia Dupier, all wonderful people, great to work with extensive knowledge that we will be leaning on. So I'm going to go straight to our timeline here. So currently we're in phase one, this portion right here. This goes until June of 2023, so it's only for 6 months of this year. It's our visioning session where we're really learning what are people's goals as it relates to Tucson, where do they want Tucson to be in the next 10 years and beyond. And in addition to that, we will have a lot of data analysis that goes into what are our existing conditions, updating any data that might need to be updated from any recent planning efforts, and then pulling all of that together to set us up for phase two, which is from summer of 2023 until summer of 2024. So phase two is defining and planning for the future. So it includes drafting our goals, drafting policies, and looking at different growth scenarios. All of that then culminates during summer of 2024 into our preliminary draft of Plan Tucson. With that preliminary draft, we move into phase three, which is that community review of what's in that draft plan everything from draft policies all the way through the draft future growth scenario. During all of these phases, there will be extensive community engagement, not only through working groups. If you worked on Plan Tucson last time around, there were working groups then. There will be working groups this time as well, kind of going into that detail, having that very detailed conversation. And in phase three, once we're kind of at a point where we've got that final draft of Plan Tucson, going into public hearings with Planning Commission and with Mayor and Council. Phase three ends when Mayor and Council have approved the plan to go to the ballot. And then we move into phase four, which is all voter education, voter information about what's in the plan, how does that impact our voters and our residents of Tucson, and what does this mean for how the future might look for us. We are targeting November 2025 as that election for voters to hopefully ratify Plan Tucson. So I know last time Corinne shared a bit about the community engagement program, so I'm going to skip over those slides and kind of talk about what we've done so far, and then kind of next steps, how to get involved, all of that piece. So phase one, we're currently in the middle of, so January to June of this year. We started off with an open house in mid-January. We had 106 people come, a lot of great conversation. Over 700 individual comments were made across all of the different posters and the subject areas that we had around the room. All of those posters are available to view on the Plan Tucson website, which I will show on the screen later on. And we are working on compiling all of those written comments together, coding them so that we can provide both a summary as well as all of that raw information. We are currently working on scheduling all of our community workshops, which will be a little bit more detailed conversation about different topic areas, what are people's priorities, what are their concerns, as well as showing up at different events pop up and starting off some of our working groups later this spring. In addition to the outreach components, we have the beginnings of our scenario planning, so that it starts with existing conditions analysis. We are working to onboard a consultant to support the scenario planning piece of the and then finally here, different ways to get involved. So working groups, that's one really, really major way to contribute to Plan Tucson. We're going to have our first meetings in late spring. We're still discussing how the different topic areas will land for the work groups, so more to come on that front. Additionally, we will be requesting a liaison from different boards and commissions, including this one, so that request will be coming shortly, as well as additional information about what those different topic areas are. And anything else about working groups? I don't think right now. We have a website. The URL is plantucson.tucson.az.gov. On there, you will find any upcoming events, all of our kind of prior event activities. So that includes material, and that includes summaries of the data we've received. And we also have an active survey currently. And Ken, I do see your hand. I'm going to finish up on this slide.
Oh, Jasmine, I will call on commissioners when it's time. Okay. So Ken, I have a question first before. Go ahead, Jasmine.
Okay, sounds good. There's one last thing. We do also have a newsletter where we'll send out updates on upcoming events, upcoming activities going on, any new features or new information available on the website. You can sign up and find all of this information on the website itself, plantucson.tucsonaz.gov. And the email address, if you have any questions you want to contact us directly with, is just plantucson@tucsonaz.gov. So actually, let me type that in here directly so you can see it. Because I heard earlier that the chat was, the word escaped me, but is not functional currently.
Okay.
So website here, email address, this QR code. If you want to use that, go straight to the website. Yeah. Okay. Questions.
Okay, Jasmine, if as soon as you could, if you could send that to Jody, the PowerPoint, and she can send it to me and I can distribute it, or Jody can give it to Anna or Amari if you want. And do you have, what question do you have, Ken, before I go on to the next bullet?
The question was on working groups. Do they have labels at this time, and is there a label for historic preservation?
We do not have labels at this time. And that's kind of what we're using some of this early feedback to understand what topic areas fit within different themes. And then the working groups will be based off of different themes that we're hearing.
I would like to make the suggestion that you have a label for historic preservation.
Thank you for your suggestion.
Okay. Any other questions right away for Jasmine?
No.
So I had put the second bullet on to appoint a commissioner to participate in the working group, and we don't really want to wait, because if you send out this list and then we don't have time to have a meeting to appoint someone, we'll miss out on that. So when do you think this would be? Would it be in time for us to get it on the agenda for the next meeting, or what? Jasmine?
I'm thinking. Your next meeting, when is your next meeting?
March 8th.
March 8th. I don't have an immediate answer to that. Corin, do you want to weigh in?
Yeah, I'll just say I think it's fine for the commission to start that discussion now if you're ready to appoint someone. To your question, Ken, historic preservation will absolutely be a topic. The question is, what working group will it fit under? In the previous plan, it was in the land use and built environment focus area. So we're probably going to have about 4 to 5 working groups. And then each of those will have a number of topics that are related. So, you know, urban design, land use, historic preservation, it's likely those will be in one working group together. So in some way, their historic preservation will absolutely be a topic in one of the working groups.
Okay, Ken?
Yes, unless there's a stampede of volunteers, I will fall on my sword and volunteer.
So we have some other people interested as well. So the thing is, I was thinking in relation to the second bullet that we have, and this may be unconventional, but some of the people that are most involved have other commitments as well, and because we don't know when you're going to be meeting, I'd like to see us appoint a liaison and have an alternate that can stay in touch with the other person. Sure. So, you know, that would really be ideal for us. And I, since Carlos was the one, I think, that had originally got us to put this on the agenda several times ago, did you want to speak up about your thoughts on a representative? And I think it really should be a city person, Ken, rather than a county person.
Well,
and, you know,
county alternate. I could be a county alternate.
Yeah, or I think we just, you guys are going to feed information in and stay in touch, and we'll get reports from those people. So let's just see. What did you have, Carlos? You're on mute.
Can't hear him.
Still on mute.
Okay, sorry about that. Is it time to make an appointment?
Yeah, like, talk about who you're suggesting.
Well, I would move to appoint Helen Erickson.
And can we do an alternate at the same time so we only have to have one vote and not take up too many minutes? Were you willing to be the alternate?
Oh, if I can appoint myself, I guess, sure, yeah.
Well, you're just moving to get the commission to discuss it, and you're both city or South Tucson appointees, so that makes sense. You're South Tucson still, right? Yeah, that makes sense to me. And that covers the city pretty well. So is there a second to that motion?
I'll second it.
Okay, so Carlos, Helen and Carlos. And Helen, I presume that you're okay with this?
Yes, Carlos agreed to throw me under the bus.
Okay. I'm glad that we help each other out that way. Okay, so it's been moved and seconded that we appoint Helen Erickson as the liaison, the TPCHC liaison to the working group, and with Carlos as the alternate. Could we go ahead and have a vote? Is there further discussion, by the way? No? Yes? Okay, if not, let's have a vote quickly.
Carlos Lozano.
Aye.
Jeffrey Elwand.
Aye.
Helen Erickson.
Aye.
Jan Mulder.
Aye.
Jennifer Lustig.
Aye.
JJ Lamb.
Aye.
Joel Ireland.
Yes.
Dan Scullyville.
Aye.
Savannah McDonald.
Aye.
Stephen Greedy.
Aye.
Terry Majewski.
Aye.
Tim Haggard.
Aye. Great, thank you. Okay, we have 12-0. Great, thank you everyone, and thank you Jasmine for that, and we look forward to seeing the presentation and working with you as a group and with our liaison. Let's look at item 10, which is update and discussion on process and progress of commission separation. 10A, City of Tucson, A1 is update from Jody Brown and her staff.
We are still on pause. Our next to-do list on our next item on our to-do list is we have to set up a meeting with the county to discuss how to move forward before we go to mayor and council for a study session. So we haven't set that meeting up, but we should be in setting it up soon, relatively soon.
Okay. Any questions for Jody? Okay, the second, okay, Ken, quickly, please. You're on mute.
Sure. Relatively quickly, what does the word relative mean? Next 3 months?
I hope it's sooner than the next 3 months. But yeah, I hope it's probably, I would say maybe this month or early next month at the latest.
It was my understanding that the research team was going to be able to make some comments, and that's why I asked the question. That's what we're working on now every week and getting together in meetings. That's why the time frame is very important to the study group. So that's why I asked.
And this is just a meeting with the county. This isn't the study session. Okay, well, that hasn't been scheduled yet.
The study session is the
and
one.
I also anticipate, as already mentioned, we're trying to coordinate with the county, kind of all get on the same page. And then we would also bring a discussion item, bring an update back to this body, to the Historic Commission, before it goes to Mayor and Council for a study session.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification.
Thanks. Okay. All right. Let's go to A2, then update on the study on the history. Helen, you're on mute.
Yes, it's a tricky button. So we are now meeting every week, and we're tackling individual issues one by one. And every week we go through some of these things that seem to be of particular importance here. We are hoping to have a draft document by the end of April or beginning of May, based on a study of what works, what doesn't work, what things could be changed, what things could be more efficient, and also how we can maintain the presence of the commission as an advocate for historic resources in a time that, quite frankly, is changing. So that For example, we're discussing the impact of virtual meetings versus in-person meetings and a number of procedural things that clearly are leading to a different approach to working together with the city. So I say keep tuned. We're doing our best. We, as I say, we're really quite intensively tracking this now.
Great. Thank you, Helen. Ken, do you have something brief to add?
Yeah, just to add, one of the things, and those of us that are doing research, is still, like I alluded to earlier, transparency issues. So many things have changed over the last 10 years, 20, 30 years, and trying to find documents, trying to find these things, and I don't know if you read in the paper, not only is the city this way, but now the state legislature, that all emails are on automatic erase unless somebody puts them into a folder or not. So those of us that are historians, and you need to see what the record is, and the record gets very difficult to find. So one of our recommendations will be about transparency. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Okay, let's go on to 10B, which is Pima County. Linda, do you have an update for us on the separation?
I don't believe she's on anymore.
Okay, no report then. Okay, so item 11 is Tucson's birthplace, Tucson Origins Park Historic Landmark status. Neither Commissioner Steer nor Commissioner Sadangi are on the meeting. Jody, do you have anything?
I do not.
Okay, item 12 is update on archaeological site damage at the border, and that was a Commissioner Steer item. He is not present, so there'll be no report. Item 13 is Commissioner's summary of current events. Commissioners, raise your hand if you would have something to report, please. Seeing anyone kind of looking, no hands up. All right, thank you. No reports. Okay, 14 is called to the audience. Amari or Anna, did we receive any public comment by the deadline?
We did not.
Okay. Does anyone wish, item 15 is thoughts on inclusivity. Does anyone wish to mention anything related to inclusivity that is positive or negative that you've noted lately? No? Okay. No report. Okay, so item 16 is scheduling future agenda items for upcoming meetings. Because it's a short month, I will need any items for the next meeting for consideration for the agenda by February 24th. And then we do have the next meeting on March 8th. Okay, so any agenda things you want to mention, Ken?
Just wanted to clarify to make sure things that are on now, like our study research team, all those things will stay on?
Well, yeah. I mean, you notice the things that I put off something like the study team, I would ask you about it. I mean, there's no need to take it off. It's active, but that's a good question. All right, anyone else? Okay, well, thank you very much, and we'll go ahead and we'll adjourn at 1:23. But Amari, could you stop the recording and just stay on because I have a question for you?